This is Joy in the Weeds. I'm Beth.
And I'm Kim.
We are so glad you have joined us as we have conversations exploring the dichotomy of struggle and joy. I'm so excited because we have our second all ever guest on our podcast.
Party, party.
Joy in the Weeds. And I'm going to let her introduce herself. And I did warn her about that. So go ahead.
Well, good morning. My name is Anna. I'm Beth's daughter. So.
Yay! That's why we're so excited. Because we love our babies.
I'm a nurse. I live in, Greenville, South Carolina. And I'm here to visit. So,
all right. What kind of nursing do you do? Because I love it. So I want you to share that.
All right, which means I need to share the real answer. I am a pediatric oncology nurse. I do cancer kids.
Oh, wow.
And been doing it for 8 years now, and absolutely love it. Anyway.
So what do you love about it? I would think that would be super, super hard.
It is. It is super hard.
There must be patients that you lose.
All the time. Oh, yeah, we do. But I don't know. I always tell people we have more good days than bad days.
Okay.
In the realm of cancer, pediatric cancer is overall more treatable. So we do have more kids that do fine.
Oh, wow.
But I don't know. It is a very different, you build a very different relationship with your patients. So mm-hmm. I get to know patients over the span of years. Mm-hmm. Some of our kids are treated for 3+ years. So, you get to know the families really well. You get to know the patients really well. But I also really like the actual cancer treatment, at least in children, is very standardized, is very well-researched. Mm-hmm. And I explained it once. I like that you kind of get a recipe. I get a roadmap, a plan for mm-hmm. their treatment. Mm-hmm. And it's the same for every kid with that same diagnosis. And
And what is it that you like about that? That has me very curious. Structure is not my thing.
Part of it, I think, is I like being able to answer questions. I love teaching. That's a very big part of why I like it. I love teaching. I love teaching my families. Being able to have something that is the same for every kid makes a difference, because I can speak to my experience, like, how do kids react to this, or how does this go, and what do we do next? And I have enjoyed getting to the point where I am now, where I've been doing this long enough and have enough experience in it that I know what I'm talking about, and it's really fun. It is definitely, it's interesting.
I know we have a topic, but I'm like super curious about a lot of things. Okay, so what do you know about God or life mm-hmm. in dealing with children who have cancer and mm-hmm. their families that I may or may not know? What have you learned?
That's a great question that no one's ever asked me. I love it. One of the things that I think, I don't know that I learned it, because it's something that I learned as a kid.
Okay.
But the Adventist faith has definitely helped in my ability to handle this.
Really? How?
Specifically in our view of death and the, state of the, I think this is like, I'm laughing at myself that this is where I took this, but the whole idea of the state of the dead and the fact that these kids are just going to sleep and they are, will be, they will be going to heaven, and mm-hmm. the fact that I do believe in heaven and that kind of thing, mm-hmm. Is definitely helps a lot, in the sense that, my reaction overall to a patient passing away mm-hmm. tends to be a little bit less intense as some of my coworkers, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
But also just...
Is it just because of the idea that they're just sleeping? Like, they're not in heaven somewhere all by themselves? Well, or Do you see what I'm saying?
Yes.
Like that their next moment will be, because what I think about, I think, you know, the next moment is an angel putting them in the arms of their mother.
Yeah.
And healed. Yeah. And does that make sense?
Like, yeah. Well, and it, one of my coworkers recently said that, like we had a patient pass away and her response was, well, they've won their battle, whichever way you look at it. Mm. Sure. They didn't beat it. And they didn't survive the cancer, but regardless, they've won. They're not in pain anymore. Mm. They're not hurting. They're not having to come and see us every couple of weeks. And so it, but yeah, I think for me, it's mainly them going to sleep part. Like that, it kind of helps. It helps in the sense that, they're not alone. Like they're not alone. They're not all by themselves.
They're just sleeping.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's also been very interesting to watch and see how me and my belief in God also, it helps a lot.
So what are the joys of doing your job?
Yeah. Oh, it's a good question.
Brilliant. Yeah, I love it.
Because there's some weeds. You're in the weeds,
lot of
girl.
Weeds. There's a lot of those.
It's a good question.
The thing I love, and I talk about this a lot when people ask me, is that kids are terrible when they feel bad. they cry a lot and they whine a lot. But you get them feeling even slightly better. Mm-hmm. It does not have to be much. Like if they're feeling really nauseous or whatever, like if you can just get them feeling a little bit better, they start acting like children again and they start playing and they start laughing with you. And that's the part that I love, is I love watching the kids that, because a lot of the time these kids come to us and they are sick. Mm-hmm. They are very sick. And they feel like crud. And so you'll have kids that are just terrors, just absolutely miserable to take care of. But you give them, like sometimes it's, you just give them a week or two, or sometimes it's the next admission, or maybe it's the third admission, but like you give them a little bit of time and they will become your best friend. Mm. And I love seeing the kids that come in for that like second or third admission, who like they go from being just terrified of you to just so excited to see you. Mm. And it's really fun. It's really fun. And it's really awesome because like speaking to the relationship, the patients get to know us. And so like they call me by name and like I get to go to work and have these little kids who are really excited to see Anna every day. So it's really fun. Yeah.
It just made me think of when Jesus says, unless you become like a little child, you cannot enter the kingdom of heaven. And how when we're sick, whether it's shame, anger, whatever it is, that we tend to run away from God instead of to him because we think it's going to be painful. But if we just keep going, it won't take long, and we can have the simplest relief. Mm-hmm. And in that relief, when we're in that moment of relief, we can just be like a little kid, and we can start playing, and we can relax, and we can just let all that go.
Yeah,
yeah.
That's what it made me think of.
It's really that's probably my favorite part, is the, you get a kid that starts feeling better, and they'll start running around and
it's like springtime.
Yes. It's like little goats playing in the meadow.
Well, you know, after winter and cold, there's something about the contrast that makes spring so beautiful. So that's what I was thinking. True. Well, we did have a topic for today.
Yeah.
So we're gonna try to get into this, but the topic being self-acceptance. And it's a topic that's pretty near and dear to my heart. So I wanted us just to have a conversation about it. So I'm going to Okay, I'll just start off by saying why it's so important to me. Mm-hmm. There is a meme that I saw on Facebook recently that has just become one of my absolute favorites. And I won't get it right, and I should have looked it up, but I didn't. But it is, it just shows picture of beautiful mountains, and it says something about why can we gaze upon the mountains that he has created and say, oh, how beautiful, and look in the mirror and be disgusted.
Wow.
And I just, I find that, you know, really profound. And anytime that we as humanity really struggles with something, which I think every single one of us can say we struggle, we have struggled or know someone who has struggled with self-loathing, maybe, do you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Or just that there is anytime that there is something like that that's so universal struggle, do you know what I'm saying, where lots of us struggle with it, then there's got to be a reason why that is a point that Satan is, do you know what I'm saying, like needling us, why that becomes an issue. So then the flip side of it is there has to be a reason why he doesn't want us to have self-acceptance or to be able to look in the mirror and say, oh, how beautiful is God's creation. Do you see what I'm saying? Like, what are we losing, or what is it that we are not able to do, or to a way that we are not able to be that is God designed? Because obviously Satan is constantly trying to get us the other direction. Do you see where I'm going with that?
Yeah.
So anyway,
can I back us up just a bit?
Yeah,
because language is important, and language defines us. So when you say self-acceptance, let's define our terms. Oh. What? How would
maybe there's a better term?
Just throwing this out there. What is self-acceptance? Let's just start there. How would you define self-acceptance? And we're both looking at Sarah.
Anna. It's Anna.
Anna, sorry, wrong daughter.
It's okay.
Oh, no.
It's okay.
That's terrible. Sorry.
That's happened Anna. Every Happens day of their body. Life.
I'm so yeah. sorry.
I will answer to either one. I'm loving how you both look at me, and I'm really not sure how to answer that question.
Well, I think that's the whole point of sitting and having a conversation about it. So maybe it will define itself as we tackle this. But, you know, my first thought is, you know, going back to that meme is simply being able to look in the mirror. But and when I mean that, looking at more than just the physical part of it, but being able to look in the mirror or look in our hearts or look in our, you know, look at us as an individual and say, oh God, you know, what a beautiful thing you created. That would be my definition right now. What Kim, what was that?
No, I just like, I can see a like, cause that just goes into the vanity thing, but I don't want to go there yet. Because Anna had a thought, her mouth was open about to speak.
You're just going to speak over us, Anna. Cause that's the way it goes around here.
Well, no, like thinking, at least in my experience, I still don't have a great definition for self-acceptance. So, but, back to what you were saying about like what aren't we doing, or like what's Satan preventing us from doing when we don't have self-acceptance? I know for me, I've over the last couple of years learning to accept myself as who I am and learning a little bit more about who I am. Part of that has been learning to accept the fact that I am not necessarily like I am very much an introvert. I am not a extrovert. I'm not someone who can go and necessarily lead a group of people very well. And so part of that has been like not beating myself up when I can't be, like example, I, running a small group. I tried running a small group out of my house, and it crashed and burned. and just realizing, I guess for me, part of that self-acceptance has been learning a little bit more about what my strengths are and mm-hmm. learning to use my spiritual gifts.
And not beat yourself up over the ones you don't have.
And like not feeling bad about the fact that I am not someone who can like, I'm not going to be that like upfront, like leader. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm not a strong leadership personality. There you go. Mm-hmm. So being okay with that, I'm the person that's going to help behind the scenes. And I'm going to be the person that, helps, I can help organize things and that kind of thing. But I am not like a, I'm not the person that like holds a group together and like makes everybody feel connected and mm-hmm, that kind of, mm-hmm. I'm not that person. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. And that's okay.
Yeah. Right. And that's totally fine.
So when did you, when did you realize this? Cause this introvert this, thing, cause I too am an introvert. So when did you,
well, so a lot of things happen in California. I moved to California for 3 years.
Okay.
Because I wanted to. There was no other, like, yeah, people ask me, like, oh, why'd you go to California? No reason other than I thought it would be fun. And I love that, like, a lot, I spent 3 years just learning more about myself and growing quite a bit. But the, out there, I was desperate to try to get connected with my church and mm-hmm. with other people my mm-hmm. age. And I went to a very large church. Mm-hmm. So the, you could walk in and walk out and you're only going to say hi to like the greeter mm-hmm. at the front door. Mm-hmm. And that was not odd. I mean, it was, they do 1500 people every Sabbath. Mm-hmm. So like, it's not difficult to just,
Boy, that can be lonely.
Slip through the class. Yeah, it is.
That can be lonely.
And I had, and granted, I had my brother and my sister-in-law out there.
Okay.
For the first year. And it was, I mean, I had a built-in support system. It was great. I had someone I always sat with at church, and it was awesome. And then they moved.
Right. Right.
And I'm having to figure out how to get connected outside of them.
Yeah.
Anyway, and so I decided to start a small group.
Okay.
And be a part of like their small group program.
Okay.
Because in college I had had a very successful small group that I helped run. I had ran a whole Sabbath school and taught a Sabbath school for several years in college, and it worked great. Mm-hmm. So I was like, yeah, okay, I can do this. Mm-hmm. And I did a young adult small group, and so it was a bunch of, it was like eight or nine young ladies who all came over to my house, and we, problem is you put a bunch of introverts in a room and no one's gonna talk.
Yes, that, yes.
So it so got true, real weird
because
so
we all just, listen.
Yeah, and so it just got very quiet, and then no one came, and so it just fizzled out over a few weeks. Like, we had most everyone came the first week, and then no one came. Like, after that, it very consistently became me and one other person.
Wow.
And so ultimately we just ended up, I just saying, no, I can't do this. Well, in the process of it ending, I remember I did a lot of praying about it. I was like, what in the world is different? Like, what?
Yes, right.
Why could I do this one in college?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Why did this one in college mm-hmm. work and this one didn't? Mm-hmm. Because I taught it very similarly. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not that the content was about the same. Like, we did very similar content in college. Like, I've done it before. Like, why can't I do it again? Mm-hmm. And I realized it's because I didn't do it alone. There was a lot of...
you had an extrovert helping
yes,
you in the other way.
Yes, I had. Yeah. My co-leader mm-hmm. was, and he is still one... Like, he's awesome, but he is one of those people that can walk into a room and make everybody feel connected. He can make everyone feel connected and involved. Mm-hmm. And like, I was one of those people. I walked into his Sabbath school one day, and like, a friend of mine had actually, I wasn't planning on going to their church. It was our first weekend at Southern, and a friend of mine from high school didn't have a car, and he said, hey, can you drive me? So we went, and he really wanted to go to the Sabbath school, because I never go to Sabbath school. That wasn't, I didn't go before that. So I went, and I went with him to the Sabbath school, and we sat down, and his name's Ben. Ben just sits there, and he starts engaging.
Wow.
And can engage with anybody.
Wow.
And I was hooked. I was like, yes. I never went to another church. I went to the exact same church every week my entire college experience. And like, so the answer was yes, is I had an
extra. So you realized that you weren't the person who was going to draw people like that.
Exactly.
You were great at the teaching and the helping and the behind the
scenes. I could help maintain it.
Yeah.
And it was very true. I did a lot more of the like planning behind the scenes, like our the outings and trips. I mean, we did camping trips and all kinds of stuff with our, cause it was a group of people that we did a small group in the middle of the week, but then we also did the same group would do Sabbath school at church. Mm-hmm. And so all of our like camping trips and stuff like that, I planned them. Mm. I would help to do all the behind the scenes stuff.
Not to cut you off, but to cut you off.
Yeah, go for it.
So, sorry. So, in this process, because we're trying to talk here about the, you know, the self-awareness, self-acceptance, you know, that kind of thing. What, like, was there a period of time when you were realizing, okay, wait a minute, the reason that one failed is because I'm not like Ben.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have a Ben, or I'm not like Ben. Was there a period of time where you, or was it just instantaneous, which is not, I mean, that you were like, okay, so that's not me. Good. I am this way and that's great. Or was there a period of time where you, did you ever struggle with, I need to try to be more like Ben? Or were you just okay with that? See, because I just think.
Before you answer.
Go for it.
Because Beth, I know you. And you like to host.
Yes.
And you you have that same gift of being able to bring people together and make everybody comfortable, and it's all around food and we have conversations. So you have that gift. Mm-hmm. So your daughter grows up in a home where that is modeled.
Yeah.
So more than Ben, I can't do it like Ben. I'm wondering if that was hard for you, Anna, because your mother modeled that and you didn't have that same
gift. So the answer to both your questions, it's kind of yes and no. So there was a period of time right after it ended where I was really struggling with the fact like this fell apart. Like,
so the failure,
it was
of
a
it.
Failure, like right. Epic fail, and just not, didn't go well at all. And so there, I was really struggling with the, like, come on, God, what are we like? I'm trying to get involved and I'm trying to get connected and it fails. And I'm just like, well, what do I do now? And so it wasn't instantaneous. There wasn't like an instantaneous, like, it's okay. It was a process of several weeks because the,
But still, when you said you said that you said, okay, God, what now? So was the failure, what I'm trying to get at is, would you struggle with that you had failed or that it had failed? And was it more about, I just need to figure out a way now to connect and this didn't work. So now how am I supposed to connect, or what's wrong with me that I couldn't make this work?
So it was more, the failure portion was more that it failed.
Okay.
So I had less about like, I failed and I'm terrible.
Okay.
It was more, I was more looking at myself and saying like, okay, why did this fail? Like, what about me made this mm-hmm. not work. Because I guess all along I had kind of had an inkling that like maybe this wasn't something I was particularly good at. Because it was difficult. It was really hard. And I remember like,
I just want to stop you. I'm sorry. Because I think that is profoundly important for all of us to hear and to hang on to. Because I feel like we get clues. Do you know what I'm saying? Like,
yes. How do you mean? Like, say more.
Well, when something is really, really hard, too many times we think, or we, instead of acknowledging that maybe that's not for us to do,
right.
Yeah.
We just, okay, I need to try harder, or I need to figure out how to make this okay.
Right.
And yet that this is so hard for me is like, should be this enormous clue.
Well, I think
that maybe God has a different, you know what I'm saying? That maybe your gift is in a different direction.
And I think it had helped that I had one that had worked, because that was not difficult at all.
Oh, you mean
running?
Okay.
So running the one with Ben,
right,
was not hard.
Right.
I could lead that Sabbath school and have no issue. But then leading this small group was horribly difficult. Mm. And it was with the same type, like it was the same, not structure? Age group. No, like, because, so the small group leader at church, because I had gone to him a couple times and just been like, this isn't really going well. Like, this really isn't working. Like, I'm not sure if there's something I can do differently. Mm. Or if there's something I should be doing that I'm not. And he didn't really offer great support into like how to get this better. And I just remember thinking like he kept saying like, it's partly just the age group you're dealing with. Like they're just horribly bad at not coming to things. And I'm like, and I'm of that age group, so I will attest, like, we're really bad at like,
you millennial, always you.
Yeah, we are, like, we're not we're terribly bad at like, we're bad at RSVPing to things and like, anyway, but I had been dealing with my own peers in college too.
Sure,
so like,
sure.
And it same had idea,
and it had worked,
right?
And so common not denominator was me. So like, where I was looking at like, okay, what about this isn't working? And I very quickly came to the idea that like, I'm not Ben. I'm not the person that is going to sit there and draw people in. And okay, and I think,
so go ahead, Kim.
I was just gonna say, and so when did you get to the point or where I'm not Ben, mm-hmm. is okay, and I don't have to be Ben.
Was that right away?
I can be Anna.
Because I know who Anna is.
Yeah. That was that was a very instantaneous.
Really?
And so going back to your original question, is I think, yes, I have a mother who has always been like that.
Right.
But I also have a dad who's very much like me.
And
my dad is not... My dad is, I am very much like my father.
Okay.
Mom says this all the time, and mom laughs at this quite a bit because there will be points where she's like, that's your father. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Because I react very much more like my dad than my mother.
So that helped you?
Yes. I have a dad who does, like, he is a part of small groups and he does lead when he has to.
Right.
But it is not his primary.
Okay.
Like, that is not his default.
He's the supporting actor.
Yeah.
And that
it works really well with me.
Otherwise, yes, it does.
Two leading actors.
It does. It's like you get two people,
and he's so good at the mechanics of things and how to, you know.
Mom says it all the time that like a lot of things happen because Dad.
Right.
Like she,
everything happens because
it's like she can come up with the vast and grand ideas, but then Dad's the one who actually works out. Like, okay, how is this actually going to happen?
I really appreciate this story, but I think that what's so great about it is that for those listening and for all of us here, it is, you know, if we can ask the questions, mm-hmm. why isn't this working? Why am I having a hard time with this? Why am I struggling with this or whatever? And then come to the conclusion, okay, wait a minute, this is who I am. Mm-hmm. Do you see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And this is not only who I am, but this is who God's created me to be. So how do I use this?
My things, yeah.
Do you see my things? Right. I like that, yeah. My things. Well, and when you say when you say it that way, yeah. I love it because it's kind of like when you say my things, I'm such a visual person. I envision like us having a basket of tools. Mm-hmm. But if we're trying to do something and we don't have that tool in our basket, well then, you know, I'm trying to unscrew something and I don't have a screwdriver in my basket. I mean, I can try all day long with my fingernail and I'm not getting the screw out. Does that mm-hmm. make sense? Mm-hmm. And so if we can see it as God, this is what God's gifted me with, this is where my, you know, and then how I, anyway, I'm stumbling over my words.
It's like growing up, we always heard about like using your spiritual gifts and everyone blesses you with God blesses you with spiritual gifts and whatnot. And like, if you had asked me like what my spiritual gifts are, I could not have told you. I would have probably guessed things like mm-hmm. singing and that kind of thing, but which I can do, but I had never thought about and really like delved into like what my leadership style was or my leadership mm-hmm. capabilities were. Mm-hmm. And that's where, that's part of what I learned in this, like, mm-hmm. is that like everybody leads differently and some people are not, they are not your like leaders who are going to like pull everybody together yeah. and like mm-hmm. get everybody yeah. connected. And you need that. But you also need people like me who could run things from behind the scenes and right. be totally happy.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. So I want to shift gears a little yeah. bit. Kim, I'll ask you, I'll let Anna off the hook for a moment. Cause you mentioned a few minutes ago when I was talking about this and this topic, like introducing it, the idea of vanity. So we're going to go there.
Okay.
Back to my illustration of that meme, you know, where it shows the beautiful mountains and then asks the question, can we look in the mirror? Should we look in the mirror and say, wow, God did good when he created me? Or can you look in the mirror and say, wow, I'm beautiful? Do you know what I'm saying? And where let's talk about beauty, physical beauty. No, because
so here's the problem is that I'm about to sound extremely vain.
Okay, go for it.
Because I feel attractive. And good. When I look in the mirror, I honestly believe that I look pretty darn good.
That's awesome.
And I like to feel beautiful.
Yeah.
And I dress most of the time, not now, to feel beautiful.
Just so y'all know we're sitting.
I want to be attractive.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, but immediately when you said, is it okay to say, you know, whatever.
Yes.
I can't remember your specific question.
I'm beautiful.
But Psalms 139, verse 13 and 14, mm-hmm. David says, I think it's David that wrote it, I'm not really sure, I am beautifully and wonderfully made. Right. I praise God for that.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So, okay, if he did it.
Why shouldn't we?
Yeah, you know, yeah. I've got a really cool color eyes.
Yes, you do.
And I have a little freckle in one of them. Whatever.
Yes.
And that's not me to compare to somebody else, because it's comparison that gets us in trouble.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's true.
But I don't think there's a problem with saying, no, I am beautifully and wonderfully made.
So then why?
Even though I do color my hair. Because that even makes me more wonderfully made. Because I have like ash 7 flat color. I mean, that's disgusting. who wants flat ash 7 hair color?
You're so funny. All right. So then why do we get hung up on this? And why is it an issue? And where does it become vanity?
And where do what we get this idea?
Yeah. What's the difference between I'm beautiful and vanity?
Dead silence. What? Okay. So
I'll tell you.
Oh, you know? Well, okay. Go for it. If you know the answer to your question. Right?
Well, somebody look up. I want to actually look up the definition of vanity.
Vanity is arrogance over your appearance.
Is that it?
I looked it up the other day. because
we didn't even talking about this. That's not in preparation, folks. That's just Kim being Kim.
I am looking up every word in scripture that has beauty or beautiful in it. This is my personal study right now. That I am doing. Mm-hmm. I started at the beginning of the year. And it was Solomon's temple, and they put gold because it was beautiful.
Right, right.
And it was beauty for beauty's sake.
Yeah. And so, listen, we can't argue that God loves beauty for beauty's sake. Well, I mean, all you have to do is look outside. Look at the mountains, as that meme. You know, all you have to do is look at what he's done. I mean, you know, flowers and, you know, all the different things that are so beautiful. I mean, I think of like birds. Do you know what I'm saying? Like there's no...
So if the birds and the flowers are beautiful...
Right.
Why can't we be beautiful?
Yeah, we should. Mm-hmm. We are.
Why can we not have...
Okay, so what's the definition of vanity again?
Vanity, when I looked it up, very simple. It is pride or arrogance over your appearance, period. So it's the pride and arrogance piece.
So mm-hmm. So here is where I see the big crux. And I used to tell this to my kids all the time. I, you know, I'm a mother and I... unashamedly believe I have three amazingly beautiful kids. So
and your grandson
is really wow.
cute. He's so cute.
I should put his picture in the show notes. Yeah, but anyway, really. So y'all can see he's really gorgeous. But I would tell them all the time that, you know, you are so incredibly beautiful. And that is a gift. Do you know what I'm saying? You didn't do anything to get it.
That's true. She did tell us that all the time.
Like, what did you do to get that? Mm-hmm. What did you do, Kim, to get those beautiful eyes? Do you see what I'm saying?
You know, I do make my hair look nicer.
Yeah, but the point being that all of it is a gift from God.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And let's be real. There are some, you know... And with that gift, I always believe with gift comes responsibility. Yeah. I took a course in college, and it was really fascinating. Where one of the chapters was all about universal beauty, and they've done all these studies looking at what is considered beautiful and what are some things that are beautiful in all cultures. Like, is there any, you know, common thing that is considered beautiful in all cultures, and, you know, down to like how far apart eyes are, and, you know, they get all technical and stuff. But some of the things that we learned in that class, which were really fascinating, were things like, you know, someone who's taller gets promotions faster than someone who's short.
Is that just Western culture, or is that everywhere?
This is Western culture. Okay. Yes. I believe it was in Western culture. Like, you get shorter sentences. Judges are more lenient on people who are better looking. And along with that, then there are some things that are universally considered beautiful across all cultures.
I would think
cultures.
That a smile would be universally beautiful.
Really? It was okay. This is really funny, but it was the measurement, the between waist and hips.
Really?
Like, in some cultures, women who are overweight are considered really stunningly beautiful. And, you know, in our culture, the skinnier you are, but still to have this certain, like to have a small waist versus slightly larger hips or certain that why can't I come up with a word? But the difference between those two tends to be universally regardless of, you know what I'm saying? The separation. Yeah, that was just silly. But in any event, there are some things. But with this, there are definitely some things that come from that, some benefits mm-hmm. that people tend to have that are actually, you know, people who are beautiful. And so I used to just tell my kids, you know, this gift comes responsibility. Use it well.
So,
and
okay.
Go ahead. What were you thinking?
Sorry, no. I was just going to say, what do you mean by that? The gift has responsibility.
Anytime we're given a gift, we have responsibility to use it well. In this particular instance or just in general?
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Well, you know, when I was talking with my kids, like when they were going into high school and things like that, it was about, you know, if people are going to, if you're going to be one of the kids that's considered beautiful, then you need to be extra kind and loving and including. And do you know what I'm saying? Not use it for yourself, but use it to pull others in and to.
Okay. Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah. So okay. Use it for good.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Because God blessed you with it.
Okay. So when.
But I think to keep from being vain, it's understanding it's not, this is not. Like, I have nothing to do with this. This is just simply a gift from God. So, do you know what I'm saying? Like, it's mm-hmm. not me.
Right. So, what do we do? I'm looking for that scripture that is so often used.
Oh, dear.
Oh, no.
Regarding adornment. And I believe it's in Peter. And I don't have anything to try and find it, but where it says, don't let your adornment be outward with the braiding of hair, but let it be from a quiet and gentle spirit, which well, that could be another podcast. so what do we do with that?
I'm looking it
up. She's looking it up. Anybody? Yeah. I thought it was in Peter somewhere. But what do we do with that? Because that very well quickly could be, okay, so if you're concentrating on your outward appearance.
I think it's 1 Peter 3:3.
Ooh, look at that. See, I was right. I knew it was Peter. Yeah.
Your beauty
don't let your beauty consist of outward things like elaborate hairstyles and wearing gold jewelry, but rather what is inside the heart, the imperishable quality of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is of great worth in God's sight.
I think it is, I don't know, something I've been working on a lot because I don't have the greatest self-esteem in the entire world. Something that I've been working on for a while is the learning to, because I don't always look in the mirror and say, you're beautiful. Like
neither do I.
It's not a thing I do often. So for me, it's been learning to see the beauty in myself, which then gives me a confidence that then I can use to then better share and serve others. For me, it's a lot of because the. When I am putting myself down and not feeling like I'm good enough, all that does is keep me from being able to help other people. So I guess like when you read that, I was thinking instead of focusing on the outward appearance, letting the beauty that you have and give you the let it come from what you're doing and the how you share God with other people, I guess. I don't know. For me with the learning working on like in trying to work on my own self-image and self-esteem and that kind of thing, realizing that all it does for me to like these ruts that I get into when I'm really depressed and not seeing myself as beautiful, all it does is shut me down. Mm-hmm. And I can't, mm-hmm. I don't do anything. Mm-hmm. I sit at home and I veg and feel bad for myself. And all that does is keep me from doing the things that God put me on this earth to do.
So maybe there's one clue, a very small clue, as to why the enemy keeps us from accepting ourselves is because when we are not accepting of ourselves and who we are and how God created us, that keeps us from
completely
doing what we're called to do.
I completely agree. Because it's like even little things like being nice to other people or mm-hmm. like smiling at someone on the street, like there is a certain level of confidence you have to have.
So I'm curious because earlier, Anna, you were saying that accepting mm-hmm. that you are an introvert and that you are wired and you have different gifts was easy. Mm-hmm. And yet now when we're talking about physical beauty, mm-hmm. that's more of a struggle. Mm-hmm. So what's the difference?
Physical beauty is something I can look in the mirror and see as a reality. Like the, how do I explain this? I have a society and a mm-hmm. world around me that tells me what mm-hmm. beauty is supposed mm-hmm. to look like. Mm-hmm. And so I can look at the mirror. I can look at the mirror and know that I don't measure. I do not mm-hmm. fit that 100%. So like, whereas something about my personality, that's not something that the world has any leverage on. Like I'm.
Well, they do say
me and discovering like who. I mean, my personality is. I guess that's the like little difference in my head is that like I. My personality isn't something that the.
Well, extroverts. Are more rewarded societally.
This is true.
So there is, I mean, there is a small piece.
Yeah. I guess part of what I've been, like what I've been doing over the last few years and studying and trying to better myself and that kind of stuff is trying to learn who I am. Just naturally, like
okay,
using the gifts that God gave me to start with,
right,
and learning what those are and how to use those. And so that's where the difference comes for me is that
okay,
when I'm talking about like the fact that I am an introvert and don't lead well, like I'm not an extrovert, can't lead people like that. I guess I look at something that is something that I was born with naturally that like that's not going to change.
So it's easier for you, even though society rewards extroverts, it's easier for you to look at personality traits mm-hmm. and say, you know what,
that's a thing that I'm just gonna
strengths
be.
And I do have, because I can plan and I can be behind the scenes and that's how I can contribute and that's okay. So that's easier to do
than
when you look in the mirror and see where you lack.
Yes, because I think part of that is also that I have experience with knowing that I do well.
Gotcha.
With the introverted things. Like
I
have succeeded in those areas.
Okay.
Whereas my physical appearance, I have tried changing it before and don't succeed as well in that.
Well, and
so it's just something that's just not a thing.
Do you not just say the same thing though? If you try to change your personality, you're not gonna succeed in that either.
Yes.
You did this. Yes. This.
Yeah, I was gonna say what I'm hearing is that your physical appearance is a result. That you are seeing is not your physical appearance is a gift from God, but your physical appearance is a result of who you have or have not been.
Yeah, that's true. That's very true.
Do you see the difference?
No, that made no sense. I tried to follow, but I didn't get it.
Can you explain it to her? You want me to?
No, I can explain it. Is that I see my physical appearance as a result of something I have done, not something that I was given.
Okay, now
that's the difference. There you go. Like,
I don't know what that was.
But that means now I understand everything.
Yeah, and so I think that's where the very big difference comes from.
Okay.
There you go.
Gotcha.
But yes, thank you, Mother, for more succinctly saying that.
Okay. Wow. So.
Right? So then well, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think this brings up a really good point. I think that it could be for other people as well,
mm-hmm.
where they see their the areas of their life that they don't like, maybe not just physical, but mm-hmm. other areas of their life as well, where you have had success and see where there is value and what, and you're able to see it just as a gift mm-hmm. God's given you versus not. But I think just like you struggle with it on the physical end, I think there are people in other realms of their life where they're also saying, you know, I'm terribly unsuccessful because I didn't do my homework. Do you see what I'm saying? Or yeah. My failures are a result of what I have something or have not done. Mm. Therefore, I loathe that. This has nothing to do with a gift God has given me.
Well, and I think
it's
easier for you to, it's easier to down yourself and feel worse about something that you have done rather than a gift you've been given. Because if you really believe that it was a gift, like my personality, it's easier to accept that. That's a lot easier to just say, oh, okay, this is what I am and running with it. Whereas if it's something that you feel like you have failed or you have done, it's a lot harder to.
Yeah.
So where does going outside of your comfort zone play into this? Because it would seem that we're saying, you know, work to your gifts, which, yes, I agree. And I'm wondering, where's the and get outside of your comfort zone? How do those two play together?
Well, I think that's a really complicated dance, you know?
Yes.
And I don't remember who it was, but there was an author once my husband read. I'm not a big reader, so he told me about it. But where the idea that for each of us, because in our work and in our lives, we all have to do things that do not, I mean, we just have to like do doing, things yeah. that don't
right.
fall into our comfort mm-hmm. or into right. our strengths. Like we all have to do things that are part of our,
yeah.
you know, things that are not our strengths every day.
Mm-hmm.
And, this particular author talked about the importance of understanding what those are so that you don't consume your life with those. You make sure that you are also doing things that are your strength, because working to your strengths can energize you, and working always from on the things that you are not your strengths really depletes your energy.
And
so just
draining.
Being able to have
it's very draining and it's very difficult. And so like when you there's something awesome about when you finally figure out what your strength is and you start working with that, so much easier, so much nicer.
Yeah, I'm listening to the two of you. I'm wondering if going outside of your comfort zone has absolutely nothing to do with your strengths and weaknesses, and has more to do with your fears.
I agree.
Or your shame.
I actually very much agree. I think the going out of, I love this. So yeah, all of the thing, like one of the things moving out to California, I had just read a book called Beautiful Uncertainty by Mandy Hale, and a lot of it is dealing with getting out of your comfort zone mm-hmm. and being willing to step out and do things. And I realized that all of the, like you said, the stepping out of your comfort zone is more about stepping and being willing to do the things that you are afraid to do.
Mm-hmm.
For
rather
whatever
than
reason,
doing something that you're
rather than
good
doing,
at.
Yes. And rather than like, for me, leading a small group, like rather than like forcing myself to like,
right.
try to be this leader that right. I'm clearly not. Not so much that, but for me, kind of my fear is just like large groups of people I don't know and being willing to like go to, things by myself. So I'm like doing the things that I fear versus things that I just know I'm
not. So for someone else, going outside their comfort zone could be having a small group because they would do well at that.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Whereas for you, knowing that running a small group is not your thing, mm-hmm. somebody else needs to run it, you would be the co-leader to do the other stuff.
Yes, exactly.
So going outside the comfort zone is more about fear than, mm-hmm. than
okay, well, we could talk about this forever.
Yes, we could.
But we can't. So just sort of trying to put a bow on this. For someone who's struggling every time they look in the mirror, any words of wisdom?
It's so hard because it's something that like I still struggle with all the time. And I don't have like a really good succinct like wrap it up in a bow. But I know for me, it's been being okay with where I'm at and like learning to accept and celebrate even the stage of life that I am in, regardless of what that is. So like, so yes, I'm not in the best physical shape that I could be, but learning, for me, it has been learning to accept that, accept where I'm at and celebrate where I'm at and the journey that God has put me on.
I love that. But then what is the point of that? Because there'll be people that argue that, and this is not tying in a bow, but going on, but anyway, we're going to try here. Let's try to keep it short, but because I see there are people that are going to say, okay, but then if you're just accepting, then you're not doing anything. But I don't agree with that. And I really agree with what you're saying. So what is, because, and maybe I should just say it, but when you were talking earlier, you said when you are in those places of self-loathing, do you know what I'm saying? Looking at yourself in the mirror and being really whatever, that it can be very crippling and create just hold away by yourself, sit on the couch, retreat. Do you know what I'm saying? From life in general. So it's almost, and I really believe this, I've experienced it in my life. It's almost like we have to come to this place of acceptance and celebrate where I'm at right now, understanding life is a journey. Do you know what I'm saying? And that I'm not wanting to stay here or to sit here forever. Does that make sense? It won't matter. Like I'm going to be moving on because tomorrow is a different day. And so, but I can't start from a place of loathing.
Yeah.
And move.
Agreed.
Right. Like I have to, the
loathing is only going to keep you where you're at. In my own self-loathing, I tend to shut down and not want to do anything. And there's a part of me that also just learning that, I guess the switch that flipped for me was the learning, like, what if this never changes? What if it really never is different? I need to be okay with me now. So instead of sitting here and hating what I see in the mirror, I need to be okay with who I am. And sure, that may not be exactly what society thinks I should look like. Fine. But I need to be okay with it. Because if I'm going to change,
or
great.
Not change.
Or not. And if change. I don't, great. But see I need it. To be okay with me.
Shame is not, we use shame to motivate. Shame is not a good motivator.
It's not a motivator.
It is not a good motivator. Mm-mm. And compassion creates resilience. It seems paradoxical that if we have compassion for ourselves, if we can say, okay, I am doing the best I know how to do right now, and that's okay. And tomorrow I will continue to do the best I know how, and that's marvelous. That is a compassionate way to look at ourselves, and that actually builds resilience, and it inspires us to put one foot in front of the other and keep going.
You know, the other thing is, and I just, you know, we were saying, well, never mind. The other thing is that some of us are just, I think there's something really beautiful about acknowledging, because there are going to be some people out there listening to this who are saying, look, it's not because of anything I did or did not do. I just got this big crazy nose, right? That just makes me to the world look unattractive.
There's going to be something that I can't change. There are going to be people who cannot change.
Right. It has nothing to do with, so their crux of the issue is not that, but they're just not, you know, but the world would not call them beautiful.
Yes.
And so I think there is an element to each of us learning that either in my introvertedness or my extrovertedness, in my, you know, in my gifts, both emotionally, because we have emotional gifts, I believe, our mental and spiritual gifts, and also our physical gifts, or the lack thereof in any of these things, to understand that, to be okay that God has given us a unique package. Like, he's made us in this, like, I'm such a visual person, I think it's present, and in this present it's like one of those gifts, you know, those gifts where you just keep unwrapping and the boxes get smaller and smaller. You know what I'm saying? There's another box inside of another. But he's given us so many beautiful gifts, but each one of us is so uniquely different. But ultimately, all together, the package that we've been given can and will be a beautiful package that makes us, if we're willing to accept it and see what that is and work with that, and if he's wanting to improve us in some area, then learning to walk that walk with him and be willing to do that, but whatever it is, but or just accept what is there, that that together makes us uniquely qualified to do the calling that he's called us to. And that even includes our looks. And that includes our hearts and our, you know what I'm saying? And our wounds and the things that have happened to us in the past and the things that, you know, every wound, every issue we've ever had, anything that's ever happened to us, all of those together come to make this, you know, this uniquely beautiful person who has a unique and beautiful calling and mission. And but with that has to come some sense of acceptance that he's created me this way, you know, and that if it's the exterior or the interior, you know, that that there's, you know, he's given me these gifts. Now, what do I do with these gifts? And how do I, am I, I'm sorry. Is that a bow?
Yeah, you're good.
It's pretty. And
okay, we always ask this question at the end. We always.
I love it.
In honor of Anna, her favorite color.
Oh, it is my favorite color. Pink is my favorite color.
So we always ask the question at the end of the podcast. Oh, shoot. I really got to get this thing memorized.
In the last 24 hours.
Thank you.
What has made you smile, happy, or laugh?
Oh, okay. So last 24 hours. So. We were talking before we started this. I'm in Charlotte today. I just got back from Portland, Oregon, for a girls' weekend. And I, what has made me smile in the last 24 hours is my girlfriends. We had a great couple days of just hanging out with each other. And like, we haven't all been together, in over a year now. And, yeah, getting to see everybody again was really awesome. Good. So, yeah.
Good. Miss Beth.
I had a rough 24 hours, so I'm
sorry.
I've been in the weeds the last 24 hours, but we do believe in having joy in the weeds, so I know that there has been joy. Okay, I have one. While Anna's been out of town, we've been Grammy B and Grandpa Grissom to her two little pups, and Belle and Ella. And Belle, just yesterday, I at some point was sitting on the couch, and she has this desperate need to insert nose into person's neck and just snuggle herself down.
She's a cuddle bug.
She is so a cuddle bug. And she was just so happy to see us. It was when we got back from church, and she was so happy to see us and could not wait to jump up on my lap and snuggle that little nose down in my neck. And anyway, it was just, it was definitely a joy moment. Yay. Made me very happy. Yay. So, all right, you, Kim.
And this is going to sound crazy.
Okay.
But I went to the dentist this morning. Okay. To get my teeth cleaned. Okay. And get my new trays because I'm doing Invisalign. However, I love my dentist's office. They have like the best people. They're so friendly. Aww. They're so much fun. The office manager, her name is Jasmine, and she's like the best thing ever, and we always have great conversations. Mm-hmm. And my dentist is this young woman who is just delightful, and I felt like a six-year-old because they told me I had beautiful teeth and I'm so compliant with my Invisalign, and I felt like, please give me a sticker. But I had fun at my dentist's office. It was great because they're delightful people, and I love the relationships. And there's this great guy called Lawrence, and he's just so friendly. And so there you go.
That was awesome.
Joyful going to the dentist.
That's awesome. Well, Anna, it's been so good to have you here.
Thank you.
It's so cool to have my girl here. Anyway, go and enjoy your day, and then. Even if you're in the midst of the weeds, I hope that you have some joy. Thank you so much for joining us today. We would really love to hear from you. So please find us. We're on Facebook and Instagram. Just search for Joy in the Weeds. You can also email us. Our email address is joy@carolinasda.org. That's joy@carolinasda.org. Now we hope that today, as you navigate the weeds, you will also hold on to moments of joy.
This podcast is a production of the Carolina Conference of the Seventh-day Adventist Church.